T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Well, here it comes.
You have a noon tea time.
Oh, my goodness. In your life have you seen anything like that?
This is AJ and Dusty on Masters Week.
Brought to you by Langdon Farms Golf Club, the best course in the Northwest for year-round golf. Book your tea time at langdonfarms.com.
AJ and Dusty on 1080 The Fan.
Good afternoon, happy Masters Friday.
Hoo-hoo!
Dusty Hera, no AJ McCord today. AJ's out, scheduled day off. We did not scare her off. Jason Sukanik, trying to distract me in the final segment of yesterday's show, was not the final straw.
Though it is a little weird that, like, right after that happened, she mentioned she's got a day off today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, scheduled day off. If you weren't around for the end of yesterday's show, Suk definitely 110%. He took his shirt off right over on the other side of the glass there.
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
I copped a look.
Yep.
It was nice.
Mm-hmm. It was a nice little distraction. Now, this is something that has happened. This is a long storied ritual at the Fan, is distractions during, being on air distractions. Yes. Oh. I remember, like, some of my very first updates, Isaac and Suk would be slamming their hands on the glass, trying to distract me as I'm doing my update. It's gotten to the points where, I mean, Suk will often take his shirt off to try to distract, you know, wave it around, try to get your eyes off your script that you're reading there.
Well, I can tell that you have continued the tradition.
I will talk to you often.
Yeah, you'll do that sometimes where I'm doing an update, and especially you'll do it where I'm very weak at certain sports, say like golf or baseball. You'll just start talking in my ear because, you know, I'm really trying to concentrate on names and like what's actually going on in the sport.
Yeah.
The other thing that happened to me, this was my first board op by myself. It was prime time.
Ooh, yeah.
And I had only talked to Isaac Ropp maybe 2 or 3 times.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came up to him and I did the normal thing, like, like acting like I was his caddy for the day. I was like, hey, Isaac, it's Will, right? I'm going to be your producer for the day. He goes, oh, all right. Well, hey, I'm just going to tell you one thing that my teacher told me. Don't F up.
Yeah, don't.
Except
F
he said
up
the
my full
4-letter word. Yeah.
Yeah, don't F up my show.
Didn't talk to me until we got on air.
No.
Don't F up.
Yeah.
And I like laughed a little bit and he was dead ass serious. Mm-hmm. Like no grin, nothing.
Yeah,
he was
don't
just
F
like,
it
don't
up.
Screw this up.
Yeah. That also a time honored tradition here at the Fan. What advice do you have? Oh, don't F it up.
Yeah. Don't do that.
That's kind of been something that's always gone on here. We will drudge on without AJ today. We've got 3 guests. Rock and roll Will Darkins producing his butt off this morning.
I was producing my butt off.
Yeah, you were.
I was sitting in that big old chair and I was like, I'm going to put this
hair. One of them you did absolutely nothing for.
Who's that?
Andrew Nemec. Because Andrew Nemec called me, called me and you were sitting right next to me and said, hey, man, Biebs are going to get a big one today.
Mm.
And I said, all right, well, hop on the show. Let's go talk about it. So 1 o'clock, Andrew Nemec, recruiting with Nemec right here on the Fan every Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. You can hear him. I heard him talking about that last night as part of his show that, hey, there's some news coming down. Well, it did come down today. Beavers get a highly touted prospect out of Florida. What? That's not how you say it?
Oh, no.
His name is Melvin Jordan.
You said highly touted?
Mm-hmm.
How many stars you got on there?
Mm. Hold on. Let me
count
check.
Them. Make sure.
Let me check how many stars Melvin, 4 stars.
No.
Yeah.
I got 3 stars.
Oh.
That's what Nemec reported.
Oh, well, it says right here 4.
Is that on his profile?
Yep.
All right. See, now that might be.
All right.
We'll have to ask Nemec about this to
is
have him clear it up.
Is he losing stars?
Well, no. See, the thing is, like, I read that, and I'm not trying to trash Beavers here because I love it when we get any kind of recruit. Yep.
I'm going to trash him.
I was a 3-star recruit.
No, all right. You?
Yeah. And that wasn't like a really big deal when I committed during the Mike Riley era, except during the Mike Riley era, like they were getting some big time dudes out of California. That's when they got Sean Canfield. And like Sean Canfield was part of those recruits from California in the 2000s where it was
most Beaver fan. You can't start and be like, that's when they got, you know, Sean Canfield.
Oh, yeah, dude.
And people are going to be like, yeah,
that was a big deal.
The guy that remember, like, there was a time where Beaver fan was completely out of their gourd and booing Ryan Katz and Sean Canfield off of the field. Like that was a thing that happened with those two guys. And it's like, come on.
Hey,
come on, Beat fan.
Sean Canfield went to, I think it's called the, what the hell is that quarterback camp?
Elite 11.
Yeah. The Elite 11.
Ooh, Rivals does have Melvin Jordan as a 4-star. Suck it.
Okay. So he's a 4-star.
Mm-hmm.
My bad.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a time.
Hold on. Rivals also says his commitment forecast, 100% chance of Oregon State.
Okay.
51% chance Florida State.
Oh.
Hey, this is good news. That means this guy goes at least 151%.
At least.
At least gives you 151% of everything he's got.
Dude, back in the 2000s.
Like, come on. If you have him going... Oh, you have 100% prediction Oregon State. You can't have 51% of Florida State. These recruiting sites, God bless them.
But like there was a time in the 2000s where you had these quarterbacks coming out of California who were all just these blonde guys that looked like they should be on Laguna Beach.
Yeah, like Jimmy Clausen.
Yeah. Matt Barkley, Sean Canfield.
Handsome Devils.
The guy from Beaverton, Kevin Riley. You remember old Kevin Riley?
Kevin Riley is not a 4-star player out of California.
No, he was a 4-star out of Oregon, but he had that Cal look about him.
He did have a Cali bro look.
I'll tell you what, too.
His dad's a hell of a football coach.
He was great to party with, too.
Kevin? Really?
Yeah. Oh, he was great. Because he was all friends with Gabe Miller and a bunch of the other dudes that were seniors when I was a junior. And then when I got to Oregon State and Gabe and I started hanging out, Kevin would always come down during the summer and hang out with us. Solid guy.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Like,
he was really good at drinking beer.
Well, that's good. I mean, that's a good quality to have when you're a quarterback. Like Tom Brady, when he in his younger years, I know you won't think of it now, but who was it? Jimmy Kimmel that did? No. Yeah, it was Kimmel who did the beer chugging competition with, or was it Fallon? One of them did a beer chugging competition with Brady. Tom Brady's an all-time drinker.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Tom Brady's a power drinker, and he's obviously matured, but, you know, that just shows the quarterback can be one of the guys, too. You know, just one of the guys around here. I can go to the party, hang out.
I will say that the quarterbacks that I had at Oregon State, Lyle Moivau was the most, like, working man quarterback of all time. Lyle Moivau would throw it up with you, man. Like, he would throw down at parties. And my favorite story about Lyle Moivau more than anything, it's not so much speaking to his party capability, but his ability to relate. There was a fall camp, I think, scrimmage. And during that time, you know, if you're in fall camp, this is mostly during practice, too, you got the opposite jersey on if you're the quarterback. Don't hit him.
Yeah.
Don't hit that quarterback.
Don't you touch him.
Don't you even breathe on him.
No.
He drops back. Victor Butler. Remember old Vic?
Oh, yeah. Victor Butler. Yeah. Great.
Played
great.
For the Cowboys.
The great Victor Butler.
Great Victor Butler. He ignored it and rushed in and just basically hit him.
That's what I'm talking about.
And everybody thought there was going to be a fight, and they started converging and everything. Mm-hmm. And then Lyle popped up really quick and was laughing. And he was like, no, stop. So everybody's like, okay, fine. Next play, I was in there, and he goes, and he pulled the old Sunshine from Remember the Time. He goes, hey, let Vic through.
And they're like, call him Butt?
Well, no, I was going to say Butler. But
okay.
He goes, hey, let Vic through. And they're like, really? And he's like, yeah, let him through. And so it was a rollout, and he was rolling back to the other side where Vic was as the free DN. Mm-hmm. And Vic is coming to hit him again. Lyle literally just stops, aims, and just drills his nuts with the ball.
Attaboy. Way to go, Lyle. Now that is a good... That makes me like Lyle Moisau a little bit more.
And let me tell you something, man. I know that some people might like say, like, oh, that's easy to do that. No, dude, drilling a guy in the nuts who's running full speed at you with a football, and I'll tell you, man, that thing was a spiral. That was a clean, like, yeah. The head of the ball got on the
tip on tip.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was funny, and parents were there. It was funny.
Probably not for Victor Butler. I mean, that probably sucked for Victor Butler.
Ah, but he had it coming, though, you know?
Yeah, you don't hit the quarterback.
Yeah, don't touch him.
Lesson learned.
And he was free in it. He came through free. And I mean, I'm not saying like he like grabbed him and tackled him to the ground, but he gave him a huge shove and he fell to the ground. It was like, hey, I'm going to hit you in the nuts now.
I mean, that's good payback. And guess what? I'm sure Victor Butler was still in trouble for hitting Lyle Moisau after Lyle Moisau hit him in the balls. Yeah. Like, I guarantee you. Who was your OC then? Was it Danny Langsdorf?
Yes, indeed.
I bet Danny Langsdorf looked over and said, don't ever hit the quarterback again, as he's laying in the fetal position trying to catch his breath.
Especially because of the fact that you had Sean Canfield that was still recovering. And then even behind Lyle, I think Justin Engstrom, who was my roommate from Scappoose, was like the now second string. So Langsdorf was like, dude, don't injure him. Like, wow. Like, don't. Like, that's not an indictment on Justin, but like,
what a ricochet shot at Justin, who's probably driving around right now listening to the show. Like, what the hell, Will?
I still keep in touch with him, too. He came to my wedding. He'll know.
Yeah, we all know that.
He knows. I mean,
you know your role. No, it's The Rock. You know your damn role.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, 100%. Well, the Beavs got a big commitment today. He's a linebacker, so maybe, I don't know. Maybe he'll get hit in the nuts after he hits a quarterback someday. We don't know.
That would be cool.
No, it wouldn't, Will.
Well, it's cool for the quarterback.
All right.
I'm just saying, a lot of the times that type of retribution wasn't allowed in Mike Riley's practices. But I'll tell you right now, we all looked over at Coach Riley, and he had the slight of some smiles on his face, just like,
hey. Oh, geez. Yeah. You don't do that to the quarterback now.
Boy, you hit him in the penis. That's great.
You got him downstairs, didn't you there, Lyle? You got Victor in his little twig and berries there.
If you need to borrow some frozen peas, I got some at the house. Come on over, D. I'll give them to you.
All right. And that's a long way to say Andrew Nemec will join us at 1.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's one guest.
Uh-huh.
There's two more.
Two more.
And I got two more stories connected to those.
All right. 2:30, Alex Pruitt, a senior writer, Sports Illustrated, will join us. He's the man that wrote the article on opt-outs and how they're being evaluated by NFL teams. And, that is something that is going to affect over 150 players across the country, including a lot of them at the University of Oregon. When you look at the guys who opted out, the four main guys from top tier talent like Penei Sewell to Javon Holland, Thomas Graham, and then Brady Breeze, whose draft status is a little bit less secure as those other guys. You sit there and you look at how NFL teams are going to be evaluating them, whether right, wrong, and what the answer is from these players as to, and look, the answer is going to be different by every guy, but is there a wrong answer that NFL teams are looking for? We'll talk to Alex at 2:30.
Well, and I thought too, when we talked to Brady, what was that, last week? Or was that 2 weeks ago now? A little while back.
A few weeks ago. No, just last week.
Just last week when we talked to Brady, and he was saying how like he had left right when the coaches were telling him like, season's done. 86, dude. Go home. Like, it's over. Go prepare for the draft.
Game
like,
over, man.
3 weeks later, they call him up, and they're like, hey, get your pads on. We're going to do fall camp. And Brady's reaction was totally what I would have had the reaction of. And I think anybody that, like, was thinking seriously about their future was like, I'm not going back to that.
I think it's more like, nah, brah.
Nah, not me, dude. Nah, I'm in Hawaii, bro.
Nah, brah.
Also, he got stuck in Hawaii during the pandemic, which is probably the most perfect place you could get stuck during a pandemic.
Yeah.
Yeah. On a beach, surfing.
Yeah. That interview with Brady Breeze made me realize, like, he's way cooler than any of us.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You and I are at about C minus. That guy's solid A, 94% cool.
No, that guy is like, don't you grade my coolness.
I just did.
The thing about it is that it doesn't matter who you are. That was a blanket statement. He's cooler than you.
Yeah.
And he's got way more going on.
Yeah. Good looking football player, surfer.
Yeah.
He's a religious man.
Right.
Yes.
I mean, he's checking off all those boxes there.
Plus, he has a name that will pretty much allow him to be a pilot like day one. Like, that's the greatest pilot name ever.
Either Brady Breeze.
Yeah. Jet pilot, commercial airline pilot, crop dust pilot.
Okay.
Brady Breeze.
Okay. Crop dust pilot, no. But if you're going with that guy can quit football in day one, he's a weatherman.
Yes. Yes.
I mean, he could just stand by. Once he figures out how to do like the green screen, Brady Breeze is giving you your San Diego weather.
There's going to be a bit of a breeze coming through the metropolitan area today.
And then like little cannons with funfetti pop, and he takes off his shirt and does like a dance, the breeze dance. It's like the Pee Wee's Playhouse word of the day, except for he shows you his abs. Look, I've already planned the young man's life. Play like 10 years in the NFL, then go be a weatherman.
Well, why don't you call him up and see if he's in between agents and then convince him to quit all that.
So Alex Pruitt, 2:30, and then Robert Mays will be this hour, the Athletic NFL writer. Cincinnati, quite the conundrum. Will they screw it up? Jamar Chase, Penei Sewell. He has a piece up on just that question. But where we got to start, rinse and repeat. The Blazers defense implodes again. AJ and Dusty know AJ, so Dusty and Will on The Fan.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
All right, it is Masters Week, and Justin Rose is the leader in the clubhouse, shooting even 72 today. He is 7 on the par, 2 strokes ahead of Justin Thomas, who's on 17 right meow. Jordan Spieth is 3 off the pace. Tony Finau also in the group at 5 under. I hope Tony Finau wins. I love Tony Finau. God.
Westwood got the hole-in-one, right? Or who got the hole-in-one yesterday?
I don't know. I can't remember right now.
Huh.
My brain is mush right now.
I know. You're pissed off your computer's doing the thing.
It is.
I know. That really throws you out. Why don't you just bring a laptop?
Well, because I've been told it'll be fixed. This one will be fixed, and it's not.
It's not.
All right. Well, and my son uses my laptop for surfing the web. No, he's got his school that he has to do it on. All right. Rinse and repeat yet last night. My goodness. How many times are we going to have to see this? Jazz beat the Blazers 122-106. Yeah. Look, Blazers now 1-8 against teams above them in the Western Conference standings. They are now minus 123 in those nine games. Yes, that does include the win, and you're still minus 123 in those nine games. And last night, it was much of the same, but different. It was a third quarter meltdown.
Oh, that's different?
Nope. That's the same.
Okay.
But your 40-point quarter wasn't the first quarter this time.
No.
It was the third quarter.
Yeah.
And here's where the biggest difference is, though. It's much of the same. You played a good team. You got boat raced by them. It was not competitive. You could see the mismatches from the start to the end. It was for 48 minutes. You knew the Blazers were not going to win that basketball game.
You know what I really like to do now when I watch the Blazers play quality teams is I like to just kind of
cry.
Well, no, that's for the morning.
Okay.
I like to just kind of witness what a really good team does in terms of like transition basketball. Because I'm of the belief that like you're going to see the best of a basketball team when they're in transition. Like that's the ability that everybody on the court has to connect, to mind meld, and to understand where everybody is on the court and to just work from there. What the Jazz did last night on so many times was unselfish basketball as they came down the court. There were so many times when Donovan Mitchell would just kick it out to the corner. Blazers would collapse onto a three. It would go right to Rudy Gobert. There's 2 points up next. And I compared that to watching what some of the other fast break points. There weren't really a lot for Portland last night. And a lot of times it was either Dame coming up and spotting up for a three. It was CJ doing the same, trying to work around like a quick screen.
Well, that's what their offense is. It's all they have.
Yeah, and that's kind of depressing, isn't it? Like, these losses to me aren't really so much like the sad part, because I've just understood that the Blazers are at least worse than some teams and better than others. But that, like, the worst part is you watch them compared to great teams and you go, wow, we're really behind,
well,
aren't we?
Well, and this is where it was the biggest difference in any of these other games. In anything that we've seen from Portland, it is you had Damian Lillard after the game acknowledging they aren't as talented.
I think I've said it already. You know, it's one of our best years of winning the games that we feel like we're supposed to win. When we play against the top level teams, we don't play well. You know, we get put away. I think at Phoenix, we got put away. Tonight, we got put away. At Denver, we got put away. Milwaukee at home, got put away. Against the Clippers, got put away. I mean, you know, it's not like it's a small sample size. It's a, you know, it's what happens when we play against the better teams, where you have to be consistent. You got to be able to sustain a certain level of focus, and you got to be sharp. You know, physically, mentally, you got to be present. You got to be ready to go, because these teams are top level teams, and those are the teams that, you know, we're trying to be next to. We're trying to be in that same bubble of teams. And we just haven't, when those games have come, we just haven't shown that we're that level of a team. You know, we're capable of it. I think, you know, all y'all know that I always say it, I'm the most optimistic. You know, I'm the biggest believer. But it comes a time where when you get on the floor, you got to do it.
And this is where you go when he's talking about how many teams put him away. When it's about pride. And when it has gone beyond, you know, we've got the talented players. It's now down to pride, right? And you have to look in the mirror and it's a gut check for this franchise. And he even said it, like, I'm the most optimistic guy. What Damian Lillard is admitting that, like, look, pride is on the line. When do you go to the pride card? It's when you know that your back is against the wall. It's your David and Goliath type fight. And it is, you know what? We may not be as talented, but we're going to fight like hell. And they've lost that fight.
Yeah,
they're 1-8 in these games. And they're making it look easy.
It's an admittance of defeat. That's what
it is. That is the new part of this. This is, there was so much that every Blazer fan could sit there and be like, yeah, we've seen this before. It's played out several times right in front of our face. The new part is right there in the superstar of the team who didn't speak to the media after they got blasted by the Clippers. He came out and you could tell he is frustrated right now. And this is more than just a Terry Stotts issue. It's more than just a, you know, they don't have the dudes on the floor or a roster construct issue. It is all of it put together. It is the pride that Damian Lillard is talking about. It is, there is not a focus or an answer on the defensive end. And part of all of that is that the roster that has been put together, there are holes and there are massive faults in it. Mainly, look at how long these teams that are dominating them are.
Yeah, and I think, too, one thing that's really kind of hindering them is the idea that they had seen the trends of what was going on after Golden State, or as Golden State was starting to come up in the early 2010s, and they said, let's build a roster around that. Let's get shooters, let's get small ball, and we'll get a guy like Yusuf Nurkic on the way who can play defense on the interior, who can rebound, who can score in the paint. We'll also get Zach Collins to pair with him to have big matchups because, oh, look at this. Now the Lakers are getting big with LeBron and AD. The issue to me, if you want to just go really right down to it, roster-wise, is that Yusuf Nurkic and Zach Collins are hurt constantly. That's what it is. Because at the end of the day, it's absolute truth that it's the same player in your backcourt. Yeah, it's Damian Lillard and CJ McCollum. They're the same thing.
But that's the that is also a problem, though.
Oh, it is.
I mean, it's not your front court. I mean, you've had a Herculean effort by Enes Kanter, who is not good defensively.
No.
But he has buoyed them up. Like the front court is not they have backcourt issues too. I mean, it's at all levels, Will.
But you know something? I agree that it is backcourt issues, but that was what they committed to. That whole theory, the idea of,
and that's
like,
where roster construct is a problem.
It's Neil Olshey goes, look, I know they're the same player and I know they both suck at defense, but Terry Stotts is telling me that I'm a score first offense. And whatever we have in the paint, we'll be able to make up for it. When we get Evan Turner, when we get Robert Covington, when we have these guys who are rangy 3-and-D guys, it just hasn't worked out.
No, it hasn't. And it is top to bottom right now, and you're starting to see frustrations. You're starting to see the frustrations boil over by everyone.
You think...
That sucks, because Damian Lillard is a superstar, and he is in his prime.
You think Terry Stotts getting canned before the season's over?
No.
No, not at all?
No.
Okay.
No. No, but look, you have another 122-106 performance. And by the way, there's 21 games left and you got 15 of them against teams that are above 500.
Hence why I think a valid question.
It might get ugly. 503-250-1080. That is the fan text line. We will let that breathe. We will let these texts marinate for a little bit. And we've got to have a Masters leaderboard update coming up. But before we do that, Robert Mays, he writes for The Athletic, and he asked the question, Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase? What will the Bengals do? Will they bungle the fifth overall pick? Probably. Here's Will with SportsCenter.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
All right, troubling audio that we heard from Damian Lillard in the last segment. Your feedback at 503-250-1080. Welcome, as Robert Mays is on the clock.
You're putting our guest on the clock?
Yeah. I mean, we were supposed to talk to him at 12:30.
Yeah.
He's probably like East Coast time. He's like, why the hell aren't we talking at 9:30 a.m. Pacific?
Well, he was the one that changed the time the first time.
Oh, show.
So I was like, all right.
Blazers lose to the Jazz 122-106, furthering their hole in the Western Conference standing. Something that we didn't even talk about in the last segment was what that loss actually did to the Blazers and their prospects of not being in the play-in round. Because, hey, 15 of your final 21 games against teams over 500, and that being a little nugget that you've been struggling against as you're 1-8 against teams that are ahead of you in the Western Conference standings, and you got a bunch of games against teams that are ahead of you. The Dallas Mavericks are 7-3 over their last 10, and they now are just a game back of the Portland Trail Blazers for the sixth spot in the Western Conference. And oh, by the way, Dallas has the easiest remaining schedule in the entire NBA.
Hence why I posed that question before the break.
Good. That's no good. About Stotts making it through the year?
Well, let me tell you this. If you get to the point where it's starting to look like you are really fighting for a play-in game, like it's coming down to the last like four games of the season, I mean, I don't know that you say, you know, fire him during that time, but like after your season might be over, like you don't make the playoffs. Because at this point, if you think that's a funny statement, it's really not. You are at risk of not making the playoffs this season with how the outlook is. I could see him before the playoffs ending just being replaced. Either that or being fired, and then there's the search committee.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, because you just posed that question, I hadn't researched it at all. But I would love to find out if a team has that has made the playoffs fired their coach mid-season. You know? Maybe did the Orlando Magic do that? Was Stan Van?
When I don't Dwight think Howard so. Was there? No. I thought they chose Stan Van, not Dwight. And then they got rid of him.
But the question remains of, you know, I don't see that happening. I do not see that happening because, look, you also have a player in your star player whose number one thing is loyalty. Loyalty to, you know, the people that are around him, his teammates, and he's even said it. And AJ brought this up earlier this week. He has said, like, look, if I had my way, I would never get rid of a teammate because he loves him and he's loyal to him, right? You don't think that he's that way about his head coach? I just don't see that happening. I could see it maybe a you know, come to Jesus moment in the offseason where, you know, these things kind of have to happen and it's out of his control. And this should be a legitimate conversation about every single player on the roster and every, you know, person on staff and organizationally of where do they fit with the exception of Damian Lillard. That should be the only person who truly feels like comfortable with the way things are going right now. Now, look, we've talked about this as well. The next five games, the Blazers can right the ship a little bit. But what's the reality that we're looking at? They're not going to all of a sudden become a better defensive team, and these warts are still going to be here. It does seem so dire right now, okay? But then over the next five games, which will be, what, 2 weeks, a week and a half or so, can the Blazers get their footing back to a point where you go, all right, let's reassess this. It's not fire everybody right now. The sky is not falling because it really isn't right now. The sky isn't truly falling. These are all things that are, you know, good franchises address in the off seasons.
Yeah, and I thought also it was interesting. Jason Quick with The Athletic had been on Isaac and Suk last night, and he was talking about how you know, the question of Jody Allen came up because this is something I've been interested
in. Hold on, David Blatt. David Blatt was fired.
Yeah, that's right.
David Blatt was fired midseason.
I saw that on the text line.
Yeah, thanks, text, please.
They were talking about Jody Allen, and apparently Quick had said that, you know, with his conversations of people within the organization, they say that Jody Allen is very much a bottom line oriented business person, meaning that when she has the highest payroll in the NBA, she expects results.
Well, hell yeah.
And it's made even worse by the fact that you weren't able to bring people into your stadium the past, what, now it's 1.5 seasons, probably going to be 2 seasons, because I don't know if Portland's ever going to let fans in these next 20 some odd games. And if you're a business person, you look at this scenario and you say, look, I don't know how long I can keep this superstar here, because he can front in front of the public and say, I'm committed to Portland. I want to be here. But as we heard from that sound last night post game with Damian Lillard, he sure sounds like it's starting to wane on him. It's starting to get very heavy. And I'm not putting into question the guy's integrity and the salt of his word or anything like that. I'm just saying, as pressure mounts and as your expectations start to fall more and more, from Western Conference Finals appearance to playoff appearance to getting bounced in the first round of the playoffs to barely making the play-in game to not making the playoffs. If you start to see that as a superstar like Damian Lillard does, that's when the alarm bells go off and you go, oh crap, I'm not in my 20s anymore.
Yeah. Also, I remember the Portland Trailblazers have fired a coach midseason and made the playoffs.
Oh, don't tell me. PJ.
No.
No, it was when they made the playoffs.
It was when they fired Shuler and they hired Adelman, and they promoted Adelman.
Damn, that was 90s though, right?
It was 88-89 season.
Oh,
he went 14-21 the final 35 games of the year.
I tell you, I went to elementary school with Adelman's son, Patrick.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right.
You don't want to ask if I had some great times with Patrick?
How was that?
I was fine. I didn't know him much.
Oh, cool. Yeah, cool. Just a Will Darkins name drop thrown on us right there.
Look, it's either Adelman's probably 5 in my name drop pocket. Like, everybody's got a pocket of about like 5 name drops where they're like, I know him, or I met her, or we had dinner once. Adelman's at 5. Now, Kevin Love, obviously number 1. Him and I, we were tight in high school. We didn't really talk much, but right. I knew him and I saw him in the hall. Mm-hmm. And I talked to him a little bit. Yeah. After that, James, Quiz, and then, you know, that's Pat Adelman's down there.
That's your hierarchy of celebrity, huh?
People I know who are relatively famous.
How many of those people would say, like, if we mentioned you, would be like, oh, yeah, Will?
4.
All 4.
Yeah.
All 4.
Kevin Love, well, I mean, he would probably after 5 minutes. It would be like,
yeah.
Oh, him, yeah.
He'd reluctantly say, yeah. Yeah, I didn't know, Will.
It would be this, yes?
Why? Those are the best, though.
Yeah. Well, what, you got name drops, don't you?
Not really.
What?
No.
Come on.
No. I mean, no. My celebrity doesn't go very, very high in the, like, Eric Ainge. That's about it. That was my high school quarterback.
That's pretty dope.
And Danny's nephew.
Hell yeah, he played at Tennessee.
He did.
That's badass.
He did. He did.
He was in the league a spell, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was with the Jets.
Oh, that's too bad.
I mean, they went to the AFC Championship. No, it was the year before.
Oh, wow, and he was starting?
No.
Oh.
He never started in the NFL. He sat behind Favre and Sanchez.
Yeah, I remember those years with old Danny Ainge. I think Ryan Gunderson was backing him up, wasn't he? Then Gunderson took over for him.
For Danny Ainge?
No, Eric Ainge.
Where?
Are we talking about the...
Where?
Are we talking about different... Over at Central Catholic, right?
No, Glencoe.
Oh, Glencoe. Oh,
yeah, you're talking about the Harringtons.
Ah, that's it. Yeah. Sorry. White Oregon quarterbacks. I'm getting them mixed up.
That's... Yes? Yes. All right. So that is Will Darkin's name drop segment on the Fan. Hey, let's talk Masters. I love golf, and we'll get to more Blazers as the show goes on. Robert Mays, you are on the clock. The Masters underway. Justin Rose. Is he going to do this? AJ and Dusty on the Fan. All right. The NFL draft coming up just around the corner, and what will the Cincinnati Bengals do? Are they going to take Penei Sewell out of the University of Oregon or Ja'Marr Chase, the wide receiver at LSU? That is a burning question that Robert Mays of The Athletic tried to tackle at theathletic.com, and he's kind enough to join us now. Good afternoon, man. How you doing?
Good. Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
Hey, we'd love to have you on and love talking to you, man, because this is a great question, because everybody out here, we obviously go, we've watched Penei Sewell for a handful of years now, and we've seen what he can do on a football field, and we go, my God, that's a transcendent type talent. You tried to dive in, though, and say there is a case for both, taking a wide receiver or the left tackle. Can you explain to me why I am crazy in thinking that the left tackle can be a foundational piece of your franchise and you would never pass up on that?
I think that that's a good argument. To me, the crux of it is all about how hard is it to replicate what these guys can give you. And I think that's the bets you're always making in the NFL draft. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the way receiver has been you know, over the last 5 to 10 years, especially as it's gotten even deeper because of the way the college game is played and just the number of talents at the position and how nuanced and refined and skilled these guys are because they've caught so many passes, all of that. I just think that tackles are harder to find. You look at it, I think about the 2017 draft, I think it's a great example. You know, you have three wide receivers go in the top 10, Corey Davis, Mike Williams, John Ross went to the Bengals. About 50, 60 picks later, you have Chris Godwin and Kenny Golladay come off the board. And both of those guys turned out better than the guys drafted in the top 10. And that happens at tackle too, but it's not as isolated at receiver. You have it happen every single year where these guys are going in the second round. I mean, think about where DK Metcalf went. He was the last pick of the second round, and he is in contention to be the best receiver from that class. I mean, there were five or six of them taken before him. It happens all the time. Amari Cooper was the fourth overall pick. Stephon Diggs was a fifth-round pick. And Stephon Diggs is, in my opinion, a better pro than Amari Cooper. At tackle, that just doesn't happen for a few different reasons. You know, the hit rate on tackles in the first round is higher than at pretty much every single position. Yeah. I think about 60% of them drafted between 2000 and 2020 were at least five-year starters for their team, compared to 40% at wide receiver. And also, it's just harder to find them elsewhere. You don't get many starting-level quality tackles outside of the first round, let alone outside of the second round. Most of those guys are first- and second-round picks. And if we're thinking about this as a multi-year approach, and you don't have to say we're plugging this hole and we're plugging this hole in 2021 because we know the guys to pick, which is always wrong, it's easier to find receivers in free agency. Now, Riley Reiff was the best tackle available in free agency this year. He's 32 years old. He signed a one-year deal. That was it. I mean, Trent Williams, I don't think counts because he only did it because he didn't have a franchise tag provision. And receivers, they're around all the time. You can find starters consistently. So that's the thing to me is who is more rare, which skill set is rare, which skill set is harder to replicate. And I just think that's the tackle. And it's almost independent of Sewell and Chase and what you think about them as prospects.
And you know, what's interesting in what you're talking about though, is that you just laid out how, you know, the hit rate on first round tackles is through the roof, but doesn't it seem as if the Bengals kind of scouting department and things that they've said publicly have kind of led folks to believe that they think that they can find enough offensive linemen throughout the course of this draft because they do believe it is deep?
If they want to bet on their pre-draft evaluations as being correct, that's a fine gamble that they can make.
Oh boy.
I think that we've consistently seen over time that NFL teams overrate their ability to know which players are going to be good and which players are going to be bad. And it's also one of those things that I don't know if you should be trying to thread the needle of finding immediate starters in the second round of drafts or things like that. I just think that especially in the first round, you should be trying to find the rarest players you can when you're a team that's still rebuilding. It's not as if the Bengals draft Ja'Marr Chase in the first round and X tackle or offensive guard in the second round, they're Super Bowl bound. I think that you should think about this over several different years. And I don't think Riley Reiff should preclude you from taking a guy like Penei Sewell because it's going to be a five-year kind of consideration, all of that stuff. So all the arguments I've heard about the depth of this tackle class, I just don't think you should be thinking about where can I find a decent starting tackle in 2021. That shouldn't be the goal here. I think it should be getting the best players possible for the lifespan of Joe Burrow's contract.
You know, Robert, one of the things in your article that I was laughed at really hard was the meme that you had posted that you embedded in the middle of option A, option B between Joe Burrow throwing to anyone, getting protected by Penei Sewell, and then option B is just him getting hit with anybody at left tackle. And I know you had said also that you had been on Reddit message boards, you had been through Twitter, kind of looking at what the fan reaction was, and it's a little bit split on between do they want to take Sewell, do they want to take a wide receiver. What do you think is the fan reaction in terms of how they think of Joe Burrow with that thought? In that if Joe Burrow is so good, shouldn't he find the receivers, or do they really need to protect him at all costs?
I think that a lot of fans want them to protect him at all costs, but I also think that's not the way to look at it either. You know, it's so easy to get roped into extreme events and recent events, and Joe Burrow tearing his ACL is both in the minds of Bengals fans. So So I understand them wanting to say, we have to protect him because he got hurt last year. But I think that it's beyond that. I think it should, that shouldn't be the reason, even if it brings you to the right conclusion. So right now, by totally informal straw poll of Bengals fans, it seems like Sewell's in the lead, but I do understand why that group would want Chase too. It's a really fun discussion. I think they spend way too much, many of their waking hours thinking about it right now.
We're talking with Robert Mays of The Athletic. He's got a great piece up on whether or not the Bengals will make the right decision, draft Penei Sewell, or the wrong decision in Ja'Marr Chase. Now, that is me saying that, but you're breaking down.
Say, that's not how I see it.
Yeah, but just how good, you've talked to a lot of people, obviously, over the course of this piece, and you know, in covering the league in this draft process, how good do people believe Penei Sewell is, and how special of a talent at tackle is he?
I think they believe he's really good. I think that the arm length concerns are real among football people, just because it does matter. You know, like, for the most part, if you want a guy, we're talking about rare, right? Mm-hmm. That's the conversation about top five picks. Physical profile matters. You want somebody who checks every single box. And that is a box that he does not check. I don't think it's enough to stop a team from drafting him in the top five. And I do think that people who really know the position think that his other qualities, you know, the explosiveness, the movement skills at 330 pounds, the fact that he's like 16 years old, all of that stuff, I think, factors into what people think about him. So if when you're in the top five and when you're talking about guys at that range, you're always going to nitpick.
Yeah.
You know, you can talk about how Mitchell Schwartz doesn't have the longest arms and he was fine, but he went in the second round. Yeah. So I think that that's the kind of things that you need to do. You're kicking the tires a lot on these guys. So there are things that I think there are some people who look at the position and would not say that he is a generational prospect. But I do think overall people are very, very excited about what he could end up becoming.
And on the flip side, Ja'Marr Chase, the other guy that is widely under consideration there. You know, this is a very deep wide receiver draft too, especially on the top end.
Yeah, and I think that, you know, it depends on how you want to see Ja'Marr Chase. I think that people can spin Ja'Marr Chase into whatever they want him to be.
Yeah.
Ja'Marr Chase is 6 foot, 200 pounds. There are a lot of receivers who have been 6 foot, 200 pounds, but his testing numbers are through the roof.
Yeah.
You know, his overall athletic scores are rare. They are the type that come along once in a blue moon, but his physical body type and the way he plays and everything else, I think there are questions about just how truly dominant he can be. So that's the question. If not, is Ja'Marr Chase going to become a really good NFL player? Or is Penei Sewell going to become a really good NFL player? It's, do they warrant consideration in the first five picks of the draft? And in some ways, like the first pick in the draft, if four quarterbacks go in the top four picks, is that what they are? Are they these rare, rare guys that deserve to be drafted there, or are they merely very good prospects? And I think that you could really spin it either way, even if I think for the most part they do fit that rare, rare quality.
Robert Mays of The Athletic, he's got a great piece up about the Bengals, Penei Sewell versus Ja'Marr Chase debate, and how teams value positions. It was a great insight into, you know, look, you've got the two most important positions right now outside of the quarterback are your left tackle and the wide receiver, and the Bengals have got a big decision to make on Penei Sewell or Ja'Marr Chase. Really appreciate the time, and I encourage everybody to go to The Athletic and read it. Thank you so much, Robert, for taking a few minutes for us.
Thanks for having me, guys. I really appreciate it.
Robert Mays of The Athletic. Dude is awesome. It really is a great piece because it does open your eyes to, we may see it out here and go, well, it's a no-brainer. If you don't have anybody to protect Joe Burrow, Joe Burrow will get hurt again. But if you get the ball out quick enough, if Riley Reiff is that guy that can just give him a fraction of a second more, like, they got big question marks in Cincinnati.
He won the Heisman. He can get the ball out.
Yeah.
That's what Cincinnati fans
but
are saying.
And this is where I stand, and I agree with Robert in this, and it's something he said that I wholeheartedly agree with. When he said, this is not a quick rebuild. Wide receivers fill gaps to get you over the hump. Left tackles help you rebuild through this entire process. That's going to be a long slog. All right, coming up next hour, Andrew Nemec of the Recruiting Show with Andrew Nemec, Thursdays right here on The Fan and Oregon Live will join us. The Beavs get the biggest commitment in Jonathan Smith's tenure as head coach. But next, the Masters from Augusta National is underway. Second round action, Justin Rose continues to stay atop the leaderboard. AJ and Dusty on The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.